This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show with me, Tisha Eek. If you are providing care or support for someone with a mental health condition, you are probably struggling with a lot of challenges yourself. It can be incredibly stressful, lonely and challenging. On the Health and Living segment today, we speak to Cheong Soo Jen, otherwise known as Jen, Executive Secretary from the Malaysian Mental Health Association, about the caregiver's journey when it comes to mental health conditions. Good afternoon, Jen. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Xiaoyi. Thank you for having me.
Jen, let's start with a little bit about your background. I noticed you are trained in psychiatric rehabilitation as well as mindfulness. Can you explain how both of those tie into your work in advocating for mental health?
Okay. We are still in psychosocial rehabilitation in terms of a person living with a mental health issue. In the recovery, we always think that people in recovery means the absence of the symptoms or people who have recovered. But in psychiatric rehabilitation, we focus on the person, strength-based, and it's person-centered. We are able to integrate that person back into society with the presence of the mental health symptoms. So he or she is able to live as to what we perceived to be a normal life, in terms of living, finding a job, socializing, and learning. Because learning, as you all know, is a lifelong experience.
So what exactly is covered in psychiatric rehabilitation?
In psychiatric rehabilitation, we have to get that person to understand what he or she is going through, the symptoms. Because more often than not, they will not be able to decipher how they feel. And if they do not know how they feel, they are not able to express it appropriately. And they would have missed certain milestones in their lives. People living with a mental health condition will be missing. They might have missed years of their life. If the onset is late teen, they would have missed university. They would have missed the early stages of courtship, of friendship. So socializing is an issue for them. So in psychiatric rehabilitation, we actually focus on empowering the individual to live those missed out parts of their lives.
You say that there's a misunderstanding that recovery is not about the absence of symptoms. So a mental health condition is something that somebody would live with for life?
It depends on the mental health condition and the severity. Often for psychosis and psychotic illnesses, it is a lifelong issue, which they have to learn to cope with the symptoms as well as the stresses and the other aspects of their lives.
So when you're doing the rehabilitation part with an individual, are there still ongoing treatment, whether it might be psychiatric treatment like medications or psychosocial therapy?
In terms of medication for psychotic illnesses, it is lifelong. They have to take the medicine lifelong. It's also our goal, actually, to maintain their doses, to not have them taking increasing dose. That would also need psychotherapy and counselling, because recovery from a mental illness is a multidisciplinary approach where you will need psychotherapists, where you will need counsellors too. And these therapy actually go hand in hand with the medication.
The last National Health and Morbidity Survey estimates that 1 in 3 Malaysians suffer from mental health issues. And like you've mentioned already, a few of them include psychosis. And of course, we know about depression and anxiety. What are the most common ones that you encounter in your work?
In MMHA, we see the most severe cases of a mental health issue. The reason being, somebody who's living with schizophrenia is not able to go back into, let's say he was an accountant before, he will not be able to even go back to an accountancy job because of the stresses of the job. So, but that doesn't mean that he will not be able to go back to work, right? So we they come for psychiatric rehabilitation, and we explore what he would like to do. So in that sense, it's person-centered, right? So people with severe mental illnesses will come to us for psychiatric rehabilitation. People who have depression, to some extent bipolar disorders, people of that group, most of the time they are able to be employed. But again, with people of that group, we target to get them to hold on to their job. It's not a problem for anybody to get a job, but it's the keeping a job that's the issue.
And the MMHA is organizing a caregivers education program starting from this Saturday, 7th of July. Can you briefly explain what that program will cover?
Okay, that program is it focuses on caregivers because more often than not, caregivers are often neglected because they're so focused on giving care and attention to their loved ones that they do not take care of themselves. And the first step to being a caregiver is having psychoeducation, which means understanding the illnesses, understanding the illness and what comes with it, understanding the symptoms, the medication, the side effects of the medication, and how to communicate with that person. We also do an empathy workshop because the caregiver is, they do not know how to feel for that person because they are so caught up with the self-blame, the guilt, stigma, you know, within their own circles of community. So we try to address all that, and also we educate and empower the caregivers on how to do self-care.
Why does self-blame and guilt come into the picture?
Things are these emotions, we the caregivers, this is the normal emotions that the caregivers will go through. Because you ask questions like, why me? Is it because of me that my loved one is having a mental health issue? Is it, we always focus on whether or not it's my fault. And whether I have bad genes, whether I stress him too much, whether I send him, was it a wrong move to send him to the best and most academic-driven school, and that sort. So it is, we would say it's a normal caregiver emotion.
Okay. Usually, who are the caregivers in these cases?
The caregivers are, if the client is married, the wife,
the spouse,
or the parents. We see more parents than spouses because our client range from the age of, our youngest is 16 to the age of 60. Whenever we receive a call, we get them to come in as soon as possible because the earlier we is treated, the faster we are able to rehabilitate and the recovery process is then kick-started.
Where are your clients referred from?
The clients are actually referred from various places like the government hospitals, public hospitals, psychiatrists, to some extent some community or some religious centres. We also do receive from them.
Okay. You talk about the importance of treating them early. What are some of the success stories that you could share?
In terms of early treatment or early intervention, we have had clients who are able to, as I said just now, may not be able to go back to the accountancy job, but he's able to work at a accounting-based company. Or if the client, we have a client who is who was an IT graduate, he's not able to go back into the IT field, but he is able to work in the data side of IT, in the less stressful and a more human contact-based job.
Okay. I've been speaking to Chong Soo Jen, Executive Secretary from the Malaysian Mental Health Association, about caregivers for people living with mental health conditions. When we come back, we'll find out more about the struggles that caregivers face after the break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show. I'm T. Xiaoyik, and today I'm talking to Chong Soo Jen, Executive Secretary from the Malaysian Mental Health Association. We're discussing the caregiver's journey in mental health conditions, their roles and their challenges. Perhaps we could start with their roles first. What kind of duties or support is a caregiver expected to provide?
In the caregiver journey, basically it starts with basic needs, day-to-day living, and then it goes into emotional, fulfilling the emotional support, and as well as the financial support. In terms of the day-to-day living skills, before we can empower the client to, let's say, take care of his or her hygiene, the caregiver would need to continue that before the client is empowered to do so on his own. So that is the basic. And then it goes to emotional needs. Emotional needs of the client, because they, upon diagnosis of the illness, most of the time they will feel very, very down, very low, very sad, because acceptance and self-stigma is an issue that they battle with every day. So the caregiver actually gives emotional support to the client. And mental illness is an expensive, everything medical is expensive. And so to some extent, it's definitely financial support, because the client, before recovery or before rehabilitation, the client is not able to sustain himself or herself financially. So that the caregiver will have to fulfill that that need
burden
as well.
In a sense, yes, right? Yes. You talk about day-to-day living. Apart from, of course, hygiene and self-care for the client is very important. How involved does the caregiver have to be in the treatment? So in terms of compliance with medication, attending any sort of therapy sessions, how involved is the caregiver in that?
The caregiver, in the beginning, upon diagnosis or after a relapse, the caregiver would have to make sure that the client is taking medicine, goes for his doctor's appointment, and also attend psychotherapy or counseling sessions with the client. That will ensure the success of the rehabilitation as well, because the caregiver would also be in communication as to how and what the client is feeling. Because in therapy, the therapist will actually talk to the client, actually decipher and get and allow the client to express what the feelings that he would have all mixed up inside.
Okay. What are the kinds of misconceptions about mental illnesses that caregivers themselves may be harboring? I mean, you spoke about the stigma of mental health. It's still very taboo in our society, and education is very important. In your experience, what are the kinds of misconceptions that caregivers themselves express?
In MMHA, it's an uphill battle to get the caregivers to understand that the recovery does not mean the absence of the illness. There will still be residual symptoms, and to remove their stigma, to remove the thoughts and the feelings, the negative thoughts and feelings and expectations of the caregivers, because the caregivers themselves are having trouble coping with the symptoms of the client because of the lack of understanding and lack of knowledge. Yeah. So we really, really have to get it through to them to break that wall and of expectation of that stigma.
Do you encounter situations where the clients themselves are in denial about their diagnosis, and it becomes the caregiver's job to help the client come to that point of acceptance?
In most cases, they go hand in hand, the caregiver and the client. So the lack of knowledge is probably within the two of them. So the earlier, you know, this partnership comes to understand through psychoeducation on the illness, on the symptoms of the illness, and it is not, do not blame the client and say that, you know, you're just lazy, you know, you just lack attention. And to understand that it is really, really the illness, and there is a human behind the illness, and to make them understand that, talk to the human instead of the illness. And then after that, if they go on, when they are on medication, they would cope with the side effects of the medication. So there might be restlessness, there might be oversleeping, overeating. So again, is a juggle between the symptoms and the side effects of the medications.
There's one particular misconception that I hope you can address when it comes to psychosis, conditions related with psychosis, where the label that comes with it is you're crazy. What would be your advice to help caregivers and the clients to, you know, turn that kind of perception around?
Through psychoeducation, the caregivers would be able to understand that the delusional thoughts and the hallucinations that the client is, facing in his or her daily life is actually the symptom of the illness. And we should not dismiss or, ignore the presence of the symptoms, because the more, we ignore and dismiss them, the less we can empathize with them.
Mm.
And empathy is such an important element in the recovery that in our caregiver education program, we have a special session that's named Empathy Workshop. So in that sense, we have to address it. We, to some extent, validate it and make the client understand that, hey, this is not real. This is part of the illness. And from there, again, little successes and little happy dance moments, as we call it in psychiatric rehabilitation, is when a client is able to tell us, oh, that's not true. It's part of my thoughts.
Mm.
It's part of my hallucination. It's part of my delusion. That in that sense, when we work with clients and they're able to tell us that, we do a silent clap.
Okay. All right.
And we achieve, we feel that sense of fulfillment even as, practitioners.
Mm. You have mentioned empathy a few times now. Can you explain what is empathy? Is it the same as feeling sympathy for someone?
Sympathy and pity is something that we almost every one of us can identify with. But empathy is something that it has to be worked on. Pity and sympathy is just you can sympathize with a cat that's lying injured on the road. But not necessarily you'll be able to empathize with a cat. Sympathy and pity is often a third party perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you will not, and it does not understand that the feelings of distress, the feelings of in crisis. But if you can empathize with your loved ones who is having a mental health issue, you can understand the distresses, the crisis that he or she is going through every day of the lives that they are living, every day that they are breathing. Yeah. If you can just empathize and just feel the distresses, it will make the recovery and the rehabilitation process so much easier.
Does empathy depend on the relationship that the caregiver had with the client prior to the diagnosis or prior to the symptoms setting in? Like if they were particularly close and had a strong bond, as opposed to perhaps they had there was tension between them?
In a normal situation, mm-hmm. they might have very good relationship and a very strong bond, let's say between a mother and a son. But with the presence of the illness, there's so much stresses that comes with mm-hmm. The diagnosis that the bond is still there, but it's sidelined and more often than not disregarded. Right. So we just have to find ways to reach out to the caregiver and again join the caregiver and the client together again and to realize that the bond that they have. Because if between a parent and a child, there's definitely some kind of bond that's already forged. Yes. Yeah. So we just have to work with the two of them and through the caregiver to see where we can go in and actually forge that bond again. And when they realize that bond, that relationship that they had prior to the diagnosis is still there, empathy just comes in.
Right.
It comes into play and there is no need to force or no need to educate or no need to empower. It just comes with it.
So it really comes back to the relationship,
yes.
doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You've talked about communication as well, and you know, good communication is often difficult even at the best of times. What more in situations like this? What is empathic communication, and how can caregivers practice that?
Through communication with the loved ones, especially in a mental health issue, we always said, can you not be so lazy? Can you clean yourself up? Can you it's always you. So in that sense, it's always it's often said that they feel blamed. They feel that they are responsible. They feel that in a negative sense. So what we do is through our communication lesson, we empower the caregivers to use you and I statement.
Okay. Like, for example?
For example, the caregiver will say like, I feel sad because you said this to me.
Right.
I will feel better if you can wake up at 9 a.m. tomorrow. You know, so it's the you and I statement. It's the caregiver expressing what he or she feels. So the blame is not, there's no blaming or judgment in that statement. So when there is, when the communication, you should try it, Xiaoyi. Because even in our day-to-day lives, if only we could make the person understand what we feel, it will be less judgment, less expectation, and less blame.
Yes. But, you know, all of that, having to be conscious about, you know, changing your communication, adapting your entire life's routine to, you know, support the individual with a mental health condition. I mean, like we've called it, it's a journey, right? So at some point of this journey, I would assume that the caregivers would experience some sort of burnout. How common is that?
That is actually very common.
Mm.
Because through the, sadly, the caregivers who come to us, they have had prolonged duration of other kind of treatments, and the illness is just left, and they have had stresses. When they come to us, most of the time, they are already experiencing burnout. So how do we identify burnout in caregivers? When they express a sense of hopelessness, when they express that it's useless, I mean, and they write the client off by saying, this is a waste of money. This is a waste of resources. This is a waste of my time. This is often a cry for help, and it is a symptom of burnout. So the caregivers who come in, we tell them, come for our caregiver education program, because it is very, very important for you to understand that the illnesses, as well as you as a caregiver, the role and how it affects you, and how do you take care of yourself before you, because you really have to take care of yourself before you can start giving to the person you love, you see. And so in that sense, and we call it Caregiver Education Program at CEP. In CEP, they also have, they forge a bond between all the participants. And we actually have support groups who have stemmed from the group in the CEP.
I'm sure a support network is very important, right? Because I guess they want to know that they are not alone in this journey.
Yes. They will forge their own support group within the CEP group. And sadly, they would have left their the circle of community they had before the diagnosis of the illness of the loved one. So they would have to form new friends and new support system. They would have to forge new relationships in that sense. People who actually sing the same song, people who can resonate what they feel and actually be able to empathize with them instead of saying, you're just giving too much attention to your son or your daughter, and instead of saying things like, he just wants attention, you know, you don't need to pay attention to him. When you know, people say that to the caregivers, they feel even worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not helping them.
So they've come to a point where they've become very lonely as well,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Mm. Loneliness is... it's part of the journey, and the bonds and the relationships that they forge in support group is actually the thing that actually keeps them going on in their journey.
Is burnout inevitable for someone in the caregiver's position?
It is not inevitable, provided that they realize when it starts. When they start feeling it is preventable. The caregivers can have their own support system already before they experience the burnout. Mm-hmm. We have had caregivers who are very, very inclusive in their community. And they have actually sought support and help and assistance and, in that sense, from their members of the circle of community. So in that sense, that is very important for them to realize before they actually experience it.
Generally, I feel education about mental health conditions, not just for caregivers, not just for families going through this, but in our entire society, it seems to be lacking, and I think it really needs to be elevated.
Yes, definitely. To promote mental health literacy, we have gone to many organizations, private organizations, universities, and the mental health knowledge that they have is definitely lacking. So, you know, in this sense, we are actually coming up with a project, and we would like to bring mental health literacy to the various organizations.
You want to explain more a bit about that?
Sure. This year is actually MMHA's 50th anniversary.
Okay.
And in line with that, we have actually launched Project Mind, which is moving in a new direction. Given what's happening in Malaysia, we are also in line with the scenario in Malaysia. Mm. And we would like to bring mental health literacy to 500 organizations by the year 2020 in the forms of mental health talks, in the forms of stress management, in the forms of experiential booths to universities, and also HR training, proper training, a day training on how to identify with somebody or identify somebody who you suspect is going through a mental health issue.
Okay. Perhaps a final message from you. Since we're talking about literacy and education, where would you advise caregivers to go to find information and resources so that they can learn about mental health?
In our day and age today, it's probably the internet. But we would really, really need to screen through what is being written online, because sometimes it's catastrophizing the whole illness.
The internet is a dangerous place.
Yes, it is. It is. So the first thing is probably to come to us for help and advice. We are reachable by phone, by internet, by Facebook, by social media. That way we are able to really, really advise you on whether the source of your information is correct, although we may not be the only experts who are available, right? The professionals like the psychiatrists, the psychotherapists, and the counselors would also be able to advise you.
So professional medical advice is always important.
Yes.
The Malaysian Mental Health Association is organizing a caregivers education program starting this Saturday, 7th July, for 4 weeks. Is that right? 4 weekends?
It's 3 weekends, 3 Saturdays and 1 Sunday.
Ah, okay. Visit their Facebook page for more information on how to register. Thank you very much for joining us, Jen. I've been speaking to Chong Soo Jen, Executive Secretary from the Malaysian Mental Health Association, about the role of caregivers in supporting those with mental health conditions. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast on our BFM app. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.